long time ago, I had an article about the value of sourcing. I think it's a great one. I think it's still valid. But I understood that there are seven different value points of sourcing. So it can be the hire, right? It can be the, you know, it can be the pool. But there are some other value points which we usually under consider, like the impact on employer brand, for instance.
Good morning, everyone. Hello. Very happy to be here today in our Talking Talent event. This is our webinar number 27, which will be covering the topic of data-driven sourcing. And we'll be talking about everything related to data-driven sourcing, how we use data-driven sourcing in our day-to-day work, the different approaches we can use in data sourcing, metrics, KPIs, tools. Very excited to be here with everyone. We have three amazing speakers, which I'll be introducing you in just a moment. My name is Carolina. I work for Accelerate for around a year now. I joined the sourcing team in which we help companies fill their pipelines with very qualified candidates using our Connect software, which is our brand new product that I invite everyone to check it out later. And a bit about Accelerate for those of you who don't know us. So Accelerate, we are a recruiting company, right? And we offer recruiting services in different business models. So as I just mentioned, we have the sourcing team and our product Connect team. We also offer embedded recruitment service with our talent partners. And we also have the X team, which is responsible for the executive search. And as we are a recruitment company and we love talking about recruitment topics and talent acquisition, we also have our community called Talking Talent Platform, which I also invite everyone to check that out later, where we share insights, knowledge, ideas about the recruitment industry. And it's also a great place to meet new people, to network with other colleagues. And we're also recording the session and we'll be posting that there later on. Later in the day. So if anyone is interested in checking that out later, we invite everyone to do so. So I would like to kick off our agenda. I will let our speakers introduce themselves and then we'll have a discussion around data-driven sourcing. And then in the end, we'll have time for a Q&A session. So feel free, everyone, to ask any questions if you have in the Q&A box down here. And then in the end, I'll be reading this questions to our speakers. So let's get started with the introductions. We can follow the slides order. So Balas, do you want to start with the introduction?
Right. Well, do I feel like this is not appropriate? So Jasmine, you have to, you know, you should start, right? Because ladies first. And I'm an old man, right? So I was raised in the old world when my mama was saying, no, ladies first. So Jasmine, please kick off the intro.
Yes, I'm Jasmine Bloom. I'm from Lemon Markets. I'm a talent lead here. We are a small fintech. We provide brokerage infrastructure and enabling other companies and embedding brokerage into their products. I have about 4.5 years experience within recruitment, always really like sourcing and work with small companies on an agency side and then kind of switched to in-house. And my last company was N26. And there I joined as one of the first sources and we built up sourcing as a department, as a function, and kind of touched upon employer brand, market research, sourcing, interviewing, outreach, and training. And that's about me. Any questions or if you want to connect later, I'm happy to do so.
So Balas, do you want to introduce yourself now? Now the ladies already.
As I confused that real, right? Okay, so hello everyone. Thank you so much for joining and thank you so much for inviting me. My name is Balas and I've been in sourcing for a long, long time. So approximately 20 years. I was working on the corporate side, building sourcing teams and also working with RPO companies, so recruitment process outsourcing. There was a moment in my life when I had something 120, 150 sourcers reporting into me. That was my biggest ever army that I was able to build. So since the end of 2019, I run my own consultancy, a little business. I help companies evolve their sourcing capabilities. So I train them. And we work with leaders to build their new strategies. So I'm excited to be here. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Balas and Jasmine. Andrea?
Yes, thank you, Carolina. I'm very honored to be here as a panelist along such great talent there with Balas and Jasmine. My name is Andre. Obviously, I've been at Accelerate for around 4 years now. And that's when my recruitment career also started. So going into the embedded model at first and the RPO scenario of Accelerate, and then later on being very interested in the sourcing parts of recruitment. So since a year now, I've been responsible for the sourcing team that we have and alongside with our platform Connect. So trying to organize things for a better productivity of our sourcing team within Accelerate. So anyone wanting to connect and expand on the discussion, we can always connect afterwards. Glad to be here.
Thanks, Andre. Thanks, everyone, for the introduction. So I think we can kick off with our questions. So as this is a data-driven topic that we're discussing, I would like to kick off this session with some, obviously, data, because I think everyone is interested in learning more. So I did some research around the topic, and I found a survey conducted by two companies called Brazen and Talent Board, in which they interviewed more than 300 talent acquisition professionals, asking them about what are the biggest challenges they face in recruitment in 2022. And the results were very interesting, right? So the top three challenges found were candidate ghosting, engaging passive candidates, and attracting diverse candidates, right? So this conclusion was very interesting for me because I can see how sourcing is crucial nowadays in the sense of creating engaging reach out messages to engage passive candidates. How can you turn passive candidates into interested candidates using sourcing and also sourcing for diversity, right? So I would like to start asking a very open question to all of you and ask, what is data-driven sourcing for you and why is it important in the sense of how can data maximize your sourcing strategy?
I have too many answers for this question, right? So I try to give some time, Jasmine, for you and Andre, for you as well. I think, you know, data-driven sourcing can mean two things, right? One is that how do you run your sourcing function? Like how do you measure your sourcing function and, you know, how does that look like? So that can be one angle. And the other can be the outcome of sourcing, right? So these can be the two things that where we use data, right? One is that I measure my sourcers, how I build efficiency, how I improve my sourcing performance and sourcing operations. And the other one is that, okay, what do I see on the market, right? If it comes to diversity sourcing, what sort of numbers do I see? How can I support my business with data that I was able to retrieve via sourcing? And why it matters? Well, because data matters, that's it, you know, end of story. But on the next layer, I love to think about that sourcing is as core function nowadays in a talent acquisition team as recruiting or, you know, or assessment or onboarding or whatever. And because of that, you have to have measures. It's just like that. It's a business function. It's not anymore the function of the weirds. It's not anymore the function of the geeks, of the, you know, the strange people. No, it's a proper business function. And that as every business function, it has to have its measurement. End of story. But I stop for now. So Andre, Jasmine, it's your turn.
Yeah, I can only chime in there. I think for me, it's like to put it in really simple words, it's from kind of guessing and gut feeling, moving to knowing and predicting, right? That's kind of what data-driven sourcing brings you, right? Because when you've been a recruiter and you send out a bunch of messages, at some point when you've been in the industry long enough, that you kind of know why certain candidates will answer you more likely or not, right? We're not just looking at people who are open to new work, right? Because in the end, the really good game-changing talent, that's the ones that you have to really hunt and follow up and source and really engage, right? And that's the challenge. And I think there's always a part of working hard and working smart, and working hard is all the KPIs around your sourcing activities, right? Like how many messages you send out. And then in the end, it's kind of like the whole question behind is like, how many people do I need to contact to make a hire, right? And then the other part is the market data. That's like the working smart, because then you know who to reach out to and what way to engage and what platform you would reach out to them best, how likely they're going to answer you because you know the average tenure for that position in that company, or you know that in average, people from that location really like to, for instance, relocate to Berlin or to other cities, right? So you increase your likelihood of, you know, having a response, but also then that it's relevant to the person. And that's kind of the whole like working smart part. And yeah, I know every recruiter is working really, really hard, but I think when you really can move towards the knowing and predicting, that's really when think sourcing gets really fun and rewarding.
Exactly. Thank you, Yasmin and Balas. Yeah, so I really like that we touched already based on these two parts, right? Which is kind of like the pre-search, the market mapping, the understanding of the market, and then being able to advise with the data that you find in the first place, and then moving forward into actual delivery and what to expect from that point onwards, right? So what are the changes and tweaks you can do within your strategy and the data that you've accumulated to make it in a way more predicted and more concrete. I also like to think about data as a way of comforting the search. So a lot of times I think it's quite important for the talent searcher to have a few of if he's going in the right direction and if he's getting closer to reaching his goal, his or her goal. So in a way, I believe that it's a comforting feeling to use that data and have every day a point where you have a goal for the day or the week, and then you can understand if you're actually going closer to that goal or not. So yeah, in general, data-driven sourcing, like everyone mentioned, gathering and analyzing the sourcing data and then being able to advise from that point.
Yeah, I really like that you said it's comforting. And I think it's not just only comforting for you, but also really gives you power and conversation with hiring managers, because you're the person who basically is in contact with, like, especially when you work in an in-house setting, right, with hiring managers directly, with like recruiters, with like coordinators, right? And the more like data-driven you are, the better you can really handle this conversation, because we might have all had the situation that there's a hiring manager and what they're looking for is a purple shiny unicorn. And we're probably all like really good sources and we're able to find that, right? But then sometimes you also need to be realistic on that's the size of the talent pool. And there might be, even if you write the best message, it might just not be the right time. And the talent pool is really, really small. And you have to then be realistic about it. The likelihood of then finding that person that they will engage with us and in the end also find that our value proposition is interesting enough to them, right? So it's really then kind of gives you the power to have very like good and honest conversation with all your stakeholders.
Yeah, I love what you just mentioned, Jasmine. I think that's a very interesting topic when you talk about value proposition and having nice conversation with hiring managers around the sourcing topic. I think it's really important to explain to the business how sourcing works, because I understand not a lot of people know what we actually do. So I have actually a follow-up question in that sense. How do you build like a story behind the data? I mean, how do you add value using data, and how do you build a story around that to have your own arguments around the thing you want to propose to hiring managers?
Well, I like that saying, and it's not my, I'm quoting someone unknown, right? But there is a big difference between data and information. And I like this separation. The data is something that you put, you know, data that you see that doesn't yet mean anything. But you constantly have to make an information from a data point. And that's the job, right? So, you know, if you see 200 people in a certain search, that doesn't say a word, and then what? What does that mean? You know, what is the information that you want to say? Jasmine, I think you wanted to start as well, but again, I just jumped in and say something. So up to you.
Yeah, no, all good. I think I really like the point that you touched upon, this information and data, right? And really good examples are, for instance, if you look at kind of pass rates in a funnel, you might see that people dropping out at a certain point, but you don't have the context. And when you then put it into context, you might speak to more candidates why you dropped out, and then it might be salary or other points. Or for instance, if you look at how certain candidates from certain groups might perform in certain tests. I mean, if you look, there's certain studies, for instance, that female talent or talent from like underrepresented groups sometimes don't perform as well in life tests when you, for instance, have, you know, yeah, a life coding session than, for instance, take-home tests. So, and that's something that, you know, if you put it into context, then you kind of know what's going on. But if you just pure look at the data, it's just a data point. So it's always really good to put like things in context, or when you see there's a number of people who are open to a new opportunities on LinkedIn, and then you talk to them, you understand, okay, there might be a big technology shift going on in the company, or they're struggling overall, then you kind of put things into context, and you know there might be more people open to a new opportunity, even if they don't indicate, right? So it's always important to put things into context, and that's in the end, you know, talking to candidates, stakeholders, and so on.
Just one comment on that point, right? So how context is so important. Quite often, sourcing leaders are tortured with a question that, you know, why the number of hires that we made from a sourced candidate, why that number is that low? That's the million-dollar question. I think that's the question that everyone on this call at least once in their life has already gotten. And that's the question when you feel totally miserable, you feel like you are not productive, you feel like you are just a, you know, you're just not a great sourcer. But what I learned is that this is the question that you have to put into context, because you have to understand that, okay, I had a client long time ago who was saying, like, you know, why did we only make 10 hires from sourcing? And I was like, yeah, what's wrong with the 10? He said, well, you have a sourcer, it's just 10 hires, it's not enough. I was like, but what do you mean it's not enough? And then you had to build the context. You had to show them, you know, all the other numbers. You had to show them, well, okay, listen, that many hires you made from advertisement, that many hires you made from, I don't know, referrals, that many hires, right? You show all of the channels and then you say, and by the way, you know, this is 8% from sourcing. Well, we made 8% of your entire hires. What was your expectation? Did you expect more? Did you expect 15? Did you? And then you keep talking and you say, okay, you expected 15% from sourcing. Excellent. Why? What do you want to achieve with, you know, with double numbers? And so on and so on and so on. And that's why the entire context is so important. I have one more example, and then you guys can shoot me anytime, but I have just too many things in my head. The other is, you know, what I love, another million-dollar question, that how many CVs or how many candidates one sourcer has to make a week? Like, what is the performance number? Like, if we say that the sourcer is tasked to find and engage with passive candidates, then, you know, what is that number per person, per week, per whatsoever? And I remember the first time that I was fighting with my leaders, and I told them that it should be around 6, maybe 10, maybe 5, but it's around 6. And they were like, no, it's impossible. I was like, why are you saying that? He says, because it's just too few, like, you know, like, what? I expect 20. And I was like, okay, wait a second. Let's say I have a sourcer making 20 new candidates every week. Imagine that, right? That gives you 80 new candidates every month. So these will be qualified, interested, and available candidates. So these candidates potentially will go to the manager. And so, and you show, you explain them the funnel. And then you say, well, let's say this is 80 candidates from us. Let's say 10% will be rejected by the recruiter. So it's, you know, it's 72 candidates. Let's say whatever percent will be rejected. Blah, blah, blah. And then you go down the funnel and then say, oh, by the way, you see the number that you are expecting from me to make would result 6 hires per month per sourcer. But even your recruiter is unable to make 6 hires per month. So then what? And again, that's, Jasmine, what you just said, right? Like, you have to, every time when you talk about sourcing data, you have to put it to the bigger TA spectrum. Otherwise you can have difficult times.
No, totally true. But it's also like, just to also understand, like, what role that sourcing play in your organization. I mean, I think sourcing is an evolving function and it gained more and more respect, I think, throughout the past years, but it's still, many people consider sourcing something that you do before you move into recruitment. And it's also sometimes treated like that in organizations, so that sometimes recruiters have their own targets to hit, right? So they prioritize, for instance, applications or, you know, candidates that are in their funnel that, you know, maybe they source themselves, right? But there's so many reasons why maybe, you know, the amount of candidates are introduced by source, not as high, but in the end, what really counts, what matters is the hires and how long they stay and the quality of hires. And I would say if you're a good source, so you probably, like, the quality of hires will always be higher. You might not have the same output because you go after really, really hard to engage, hard to find talent, and the impact that these talents make is way, way greater. And that's just something that a business has to understand. Otherwise, you have no appreciation for sourcing. If you're just looking for, you know, like a CV pusher or something, that's not what really sourcing is. It's way more than that. And it's way more important because in the end, these really game-changing talents, you find them through sourcing. And for that, you need to have appreciation and you cannot just like play a numbers game in the end. And you know, you have to have like 20 CVs. I mean, you have to consider your overall talent size, how hard the talent is to engage and so on, and what makes sense and how overall your organization is functioning, what your value proposition is. You might have the greatest sourcer, but for instance, if your employer brand and reputation is not great, well, you know, it's not going to help you much, right?
Exactly. Thanks for that point. Maybe I can quickly add before we move to the next question. I like these examples also of like bringing value with the sourcing data, right? And then what you mentioned there, Balash, meaning you added 8% or 8 candidates, that's 8% of the total in all functions. So definitely there is a need to educate the market, educate the hiring manager. And this is something that is not yet that well known out there. And usually the sourcer being that person that is going through this acceptance, like, yes, sir, I'll do this. Yes, sir, I'll find it. And I think the biggest value add is when you actually, I just had an example today of a kickoff for a role where, you know, the requirements were so well stipulated. And before the call, we did the search and it resulted in 140 people in the whole world that meet this criteria, right? So bringing that to the kickoff, it's already a big value. You say, look, there's only 140 people, most likely. The greater majority of these are already satisfied with their current role. You need to be a bit flexible here or there, or else you will not get any interested candidate through a sourcing type of recruitment. So yeah, this is I think the value that sourcing brings.
Yeah, you definitely have to like sometimes break hard truth, but also then kind of, you know, as I said, like the kickoff meetings are so important. Like A, you bring like data to it, you set expectations, but then also you come up with a strategy together. You know, like a sourcer is not like, you know, a servant. They are like, you know, equally to a recruiter, to a hiring manager. Basically, you know, recruitment and hiring people is a team sport, and a sourcer can really add value there. But also then coming up with a strategy together, maybe, you know, especially when you're super small talent pool, you might, you know, need to look at who has connections to certain people, how to approach them. But maybe, you know, the future manager is a person that should reach out, right? We all love flattery, especially when you're like in a smaller context. You know, if maybe a CEO like reaches out, or, you know, like a head of engineering manager, you increase your likelihood. Or for instance, if a peer reaches out, or even for instance, if you look at trying to hire like the diverse candidate for whatever category, whether it's gender, sexual orientation, and so on, I think those candidates are easier to engage when a peer is reaching out to them. They kind of see that they feel represented in a company, you know, in their future employer and what the value proposition is. So it's really important to have like a proper kickoff and set the strategy, especially when you have this really, really hard to find people.
So on this point, and I'm sorry, Caroline, you know, we just got stuck with this one question. But what you guys mentioned, right? So I think, you know, like why we have to talk about data when it comes to sourcing, because often our partners, sometimes even the HR people or talent acquisition people, they don't really understand sourcing in depth and they see sourcing as a black box. I really often, hiring managers, that's their number one problem. They just don't understand what we do when we say that we source. They don't get it. They don't get the concept. I don't know why. Well, it's a great question, right? But anyway, they don't get the concept. And there are simple exercises, right, that you can play. What I really like is that there's a hiring manager, there's a job spec, right, requirements, and then you show them live a search and you say, hey, listen, you want to see all of these acronyms and keywords and requirements on the profile. I understand, but you know, let me show you something. If I run all of it together and then you run a live search in front of them, you know, that's when you open the black box. You make them realize the market and you show them, say, well, listen, I'm running all of these keywords. If you really insist to everyone, you know, we will get 140. However, if I remove just one of the requirements, that's how your pool will grow. If I remove this one and that one, you know, if I say, well, I know you need a cloud technology, but what if we bring, you know, people with Google Cloud or with Amazon, and I open up like that. So I'm using some synonyms and it's just so easy for us. It's so simple. However, usually this is just the missing piece of information that hiring managers are looking for, because that helps them understand it. Ah, okay, so that's how sourcing works. But I can tell you, I've seen too few sourcers running any of these things yet. But I think, you know, in our industry, we tend to speak with few, many, too many. I don't know. You know, when I ask, I think recruiters usually are not data driven. When you say, oh, how many candidates do you have in the funnel? They say, well, I have quite a lot. But that's not an answer, right? Anyway, sorry, I stopped. If you want to move on, Caroline, feel free to jump on to the next question, because we can stay hours and days and weeks even on this one.
Oh, thanks so much, everyone, for sharing your ideas. I'm really loving this discussion. I mean, the questions are just suggestions, right? The important thing is the discussion. So I'm very grateful for all your experiences. That's very interesting. I'm sure everyone is really enjoying. So moving on to the next topic. So I would like to ask you guys about the sourcing process, right? In which part of the sourcing process would benefit the most with data? So I'm very curious to know if, do you think data would be more helpful, let's say, in the beginning of the search, when you're trying to see which channels are you using? Is it LinkedIn? Is it Twitter? Is it GitHub? Is it Slack? Or do you feel like data would be more helpful when you're analyzing response rate? Reach out messages are working the best, or do you think it's actually in the end of the process, like when you're building reports to stakeholders or when you're collecting and analyzing data in your ATS? So, or which other part of the process do you think data would be more helpful?
I think it's hard to choose. We probably, like all the panelists, can agree, like we can't really choose, it's important everywhere. But I think for me, it starts with an intake sheet, with a great kickoff. Like a hiring manager needs to give me half an hour, 45 minutes, and takes time before to really fill out a long ass questionnaire. Like that's really, really important. That's like the basic, like that's, and it's sometimes hard to set these boundaries, but like at some point we started, for instance, in N26, that we did like certain rules, we sort of called it a sources cloak, and we had certain, let's say, requirements, it was abbreviation, you know, to keep each other in the loop, that you have intake, you have kickoff meetings, you do to really, because in the end, you can only work and be data-driven when you really have every stakeholder playing their part. And that really starts with the first point of contact, meaning having a great intake meeting. For that, you need to do your research, you know, provide me with, for instance, what do you think is an ideal candidate or someone that you spoke to prior that we weren't able to hire, but they were really great. And, you know, what this person is reporting into, what are like mandatory skills, optional skills, you know, what's the working style of the team? What's the diversity? Like, there's so many questions and things I need to understand. Titles to disregard, alternative titles. I can do my research, right? But that's where it starts. And I think that's really where you set yourself up for success. Obviously, you need to put in the work throughout like the later work. But if the first point is not right and the hiring manager, for instance, doesn't give you the time, or sometimes I really have no clue about the market. I mean, you can do your research, all that stuff, but in the end, if your stakeholders are not like willing to work with you and put in the work in the beginning, it's really hard to be successful, I think. That's just a personal opinion, but yeah.
I would say that you have to understand your conversion ratio. You have to understand your funnel. And you have to more understand the conversion between the funnel steps rather than the fixed numbers on a certain, you know, for a certain status. You, again, when you see something like, you know, I was emailing 20 people, that doesn't say a word. That doesn't mean anything. You have to understand the conversion, right? and that again leads to so many sub questions. But basically, I think that's the most important part in the sourcing process, that you need to understand that how many people you have to source, like search on the top of your funnel to make that many number of submissions or to make that many number of hires, if you wish. And that's the most important part, because then if you understand the conversion, if you have targets on your conversion ratio, then you will be able to start improving your sourcing process. Other than that, it's just a black box, right? So I love to say that technically there are four steps of the sourcing process, right? We have search, we have the connection part, and we connect with the candidate, we have the engagement part, and then we have a screening and the qualification part. That's it. You know, whatever you source, that's the sourcing process. Search, connect, engage, qualify. And if you start measuring the conversion between these four major steps, then you will always understand where you have to bring an improvement. And if I can have one more sentence, why this conversion is super helpful, because often there's a bad practice in the industry that every time when you lack, let's say, submissions, when you need more candidates, you start from scratch. You always go back to the top of the funnel and you search more. But this is just not efficient, because sometimes you have a defect, if you wish, a performance defect somewhere in between the funnel, right? Sometimes searching even more people is not the answer. Sometimes you just have to try and go back to those people that you've already contacted, but they haven't yet replied to you. You know, that's why the conversion is the only answer.
Nice one.
I disagree there a bit, because I think it's a very agency focused mindset, you know, to just like, okay, you have to put in more and you have to kind of, you know, increase conversion, right? But in the end, if you just kind of try to throw mud at a wall and see what sticks, not going to work. So you need to find like a hook to really, you know, if you want to, for instance, hang a jacket on. And I think that's kind of really the first step. And obviously, you should like always run sequences. I mean, follow-ups are mandatory. That's like a basic of a source, as well as, you know, like kind of looking where are kind of bottlenecks throughout the funnel, because it's usually around like process or process design, not following up like how like people manage people through the process and so on. But in the end, I think the first part, the whole research part, is really important, because that's kind of what really enables you to work smart. And that means then, you know, for instance, creating a checklist, like, okay, what are the location? What are the combinations? Write down a number of different Boolean strengths you're gonna try, you know, look at maybe what are other kind of key differentiators that will kind of get you faster to the candidates you need, right? Whether it's certain certificates or so on, what is the platform that's best to, and that's kind of like that sourcing strategy and like being data-driven at the first part. I think that's kind of really the key, because in the end, like later on, it's just like, okay, you put more in and so on, and you try to kind of increase the conversion. But in the end, if the talent market is not set right, or the approach is not right in engaging. So it's the same what you were saying earlier, right, with information and context. I think the first part really provides context and sets you up for success.
Right. So Andre is saying in the chat that conversion can be tricky, right? So as long as we only measure the top bottom conversion, that's probably, again, that's not helpful. You know, that will not tell the right information that you need. Because again, let's say that, you know, from 100 candidates, 100 searched people, you make, let's say, 3 submissions, right? But as you go through the conversion, like, as you know, as Jasmine, you see, right, there can be so many various bottlenecks, right? So that's why measuring the top bottom is just not enough. You really have to dig deeper. You have to like scan in the process steps, and that's the conversion ratio that's helpful. I was long time ago with Randstad, I was able to measure, you know, with my huge center of sourcers, we were able to measure the conversion ratio of various sourcing channels, for instance. So I was able to tell you that if we go to Monster Board in the Netherlands, how many people we have to search on Monster to make a submission, versus if I go to LinkedIn in the Netherlands, how many people do I have to search on LinkedIn to make a sub? And that is super helpful, right? And then we were able to even to build conversion ratios per countries. Like, this is just extremely exciting to understand that why we need to search for, you know, we had to search for fewer people in the Netherlands and the UK than in France or in Germany, because the conversion ratio is better in those countries, because those people at that time were more open whatsoever than, for instance, a German person, right? So that's why the conversion is so helpful. And let me have a last sentence, right? So something I learned from Julia from Amazing Hiring. Once I was listening to her presentation, and she told us that she had that sentence like this. She said, every time, she's a sales, head of sales, right? That's important. So she's sales. Every time when I get a rejection on my sales action, I actually feel happy, because I know that I'm one step closer to make a win. And I was like, what? And that's what she said. That's my conversion thinking. Every time when someone rejects my email, I'm just happy, because I know that the next one, someone coming up soon will accept my offer. And that's super helpful if you understand conversion. If you know that many candidates you have to search for, that many emails you have to send, that many follow-ups you have to send, because based on number, that's how your performance goes. If you see this data, then you can actually run the process as a machine. Mm-hmm. You can more or less like this, we will get the success.
I think we're looking at the same thing from different perspectives, right? Because what I was saying, especially when you said like, hey, because when I look at data and, you know, for instance, from months, I need to engage less people. But this is also like contextual data. And this is for me kind of all at the very top to understand, okay, what is the tool that will get me like best results? For instance, especially hard to engage talent, which is not actively looking. Any sequencing tool, whether it's like GEM or Amazing Hiring, you know, will get you like way better conversion or just response rates or you know, but it's obviously something that you should already kind of in the beginning, like set the hiring strategy, like kind of think of and also understand why that is. You also mentioned that different countries and location, right? So there's like certain knowledge, which for instance, sometimes data, which is the context doesn't give you, right? That you have long periods of notice. And that also means that when people, for instance, in Germany open new opportunities, they're so bored and frustrated by their job that then they kind of quit their job and then start looking, right? So, and that's just like the context that you, like the data doesn't always provide you. And that's why I'm saying like research, or for instance, if you look at there's certain changes in industries, that's kind of like also the market knowledge that you need to have at the very beginning to kind of be targeted and not just kind of have a blind approach of, hey, okay, I need to have 100 people that I reach out to. So I get in the end, like, you know, 5 hires out of that, right? But like the context in the sense, like, you know, depending on whether you have very generic roles, then probably that like really works. If it's, you know, I don't know, account executive roles and not really specific. Yeah, but I think in tech, it's really the contextual knowledge, like where to look for to really kind of get the success and put the data into context. And that's why I think like the top part for me was always my experience really interesting in these conversations with hiring managers, with engineering themselves, really, really helped to change the game to, yeah, put the data into context.
Last thing, Caroline, then you go, right? I was talking to a client and the client was like, well, you know, we made 25 hires from sourcing and, you know, we made 100 hires from advertisement. So, you know, like prove me why sourcing is helpful, right? And yes, if you just see this one and without the conversion, okay. But then I showed the client that, well, listen, check the entire funnel. And it was an amazing, because I showed the client that to make 25 hires, let's say we had to talk to X number of candidates, but to make 100 hires from advertisement, we had to go through 30,000 applicants. And that was a moment when you say, well, hey, listen, client, have you ever thought about how much time we waste just like going through the applicants, processing the applicants, rejecting the not relevant applicants, whatsoever, right? And that's the moment when, again, you use the conversion ratio, right? You put things into perspective and you make a client understand, or you make a leader understand that, oh gosh, like that's efficiency. That's the efficiency of sourcing. And, you know, and then, you know, like since, so from the moment when you see the entire funnel and the conversion, right? So these numbers at the end, you know, like we'll get so more means and, you know, and points.
Moving on to the next topic. This is personally my favorite question. I think we covered a bit about this topic, but maybe we can dive deeper. So how do you use data to understand the market you're sourcing for? And how do you show this information to hiring managers? I think we covered this topic a little bit, and I just would like to highlight, because I think sourcers, we have the power to really spot market trends and to recognize how these trends can both be challenges and opportunities for the business, and how we can use sourcing to recruit in different locations, different markets, and also for a different set of skills. So I know we talked about this a little bit, but do you have any more insights on how you do that?
Yeah, I think one point that you touched upon, which is I think that we can only highlight, is to also show what you don't see in the end, like you touched upon a bit, that you're really happy when you get a response from someone that's not, you know, interested, which is, it's really good, because that means the person thought your message or overall what your company is proposing is interesting enough to even take the time out of the day to respond, right? This is kind of one step closer to it, you know, re-engaging at a later stage. So also kind of showing hiring managers who are the people who are not interested and why maybe those reasons are, whether they don't want to relocate, the salary offering or the benefits are not up to the standard, or maybe there's reputational issues, or just that they're looking for a different title or career advancements and so on. So kind of given a full picture, I think that's like kind of interesting to hiring, show them what they don't see, because they only meet the people in the end in the interviews, and also kind of show them your work, because you might have fewer people in interview processes, but really, really good ones. But then you also kind of show who are the people you weren't able to engage, or that you were able to engage, but they're not interested, right? I think that's a really interesting part. And one tool to make it a bit more concrete that I really, really like, not quite sure how many people know it, but there's a tool called LinkedIn Insights, or there's other sourcing tools, for instance, in Antello or in others, where you have a bit more metrics on talent pools, which is not the same as showing, for instance, a LinkedIn recruiter search, right? Where you, for instance, see like how often in certain locations are jobs advertised and they are reflecting certain skills. So you also understand what are common job titles. You can find, for instance, average tenures in certain companies. You understand which, for instance, is really powerful, retention, but also attrition rate of your own company. And that's like so powerful to really understand well, because you, if you have to, for instance, work with a leaking bucket, so to say, you source and you try to hire lots of people, but for instance, employees are going to XYZ companies, then this is, I think, really powerful to show to hiring managers, right? Because they also know what they need. Because if they kind of mention, I want to have candidates from Google, Meta, and I don't know, Amazon, and you say like, but those are the companies people go to, or this is just not really where we were able to attract candidates in the past, or salary ranges are out of range. This is kind of, I think, really, really interesting to show. And I think this is one tool where you have great market insight. Besides, obviously, you can use anything like DealRoom or Crunchbase to kind of map target companies. But I personally used a lot LinkedIn Insights. And if you know well how to use it, it's very powerful, because really, on a grand scheme, illustrate how candidates with what skills move and who's hiring and why, and kind of input this into context. And really fun. Highly recommend. If you work in a larger environment, use it.
And I would just add one comment on that one, because when you mentioned that we have to show what the manager doesn't see, but we also have to understand what we don't see. And I think it's also really important in this question that we have to acknowledge that there's a lot that we don't see and we don't understand. So what do I mean is that I was just talking to a recruiter yesterday in Argentina, and he was like, why are you suggesting us to use other channels than LinkedIn? Another $1 million question. And I was like, well, listen, so let's just focus on Argentina. There are 45 million people living in Argentina, and there are less than 9 million people are on LinkedIn. Now, you know, what is that, right? Is it the great portion? Is it not the great portion? You know, that's like 20% of your entire country population. And, you know, and then he was like, yeah, okay, but blue collar people are not on LinkedIn, you know. So that's the thing that we don't see, and that's the thing that we also have to put like in, you know, like in context with LinkedIn Insights, right? Because if you go to LinkedIn Insights and you run at the Argentina and you will analyze 9 million people's data, that's certainly powerful. But you also have to understand again the bigger picture in terms of what you don't see. Who are those other 80% of the Argentinian population who are not on LinkedIn? Where are they? You know, like what sort of data information do we know about them? And so on and so on. Just one comment on this one. CIA has a fact book. I know it sounds like, wow, CIA, but yeah, it's a CIA fact book. So I will put you to the chat, the link, and you can find extremely great information, surprising, right? Because it's CIA. So you can find so much information about every country in terms of their population, demographics, education system, everything, you know. And that usually gives a lot of extra information to your LinkedIn Insights data, because that can help you build the big picture. And I stop now. I'm just going to find the CIA thing and I'm going to put it to the chat.
Nice, Balazs. Would be happy to take a look at that. Also to add on a few points and also, yeah, mirror a bit what you were saying here. So for one, this kind of relationship between the talent sourcer and whoever the stakeholder is, it's crucial to gain trust there. I think going back to that comforting side of things, when you bring in value to that person, when you advise them on whatever data you have accumulated, it should be creating some type of difference for their day-to-day and understanding the market. So I think it's crucial to build that trust, to come to those kickoff meetings with the talent sourcer and let them also express what they're seeing. And then I think in general, this is the external facing person inside of an organization. To enhance the probability, obviously, they will be 100% different if you're counting with one talent sourcer or if you're counting with a entirety of a recruitment agency, for example. So if you'd have a lot of talent sourcers that are having data previously gathered towards a certain role, that previous gathered data would be the indicator for you to look at and compare and predict how many people you might need to contact to reach that common goal. So of course I'm biased. I work for Accelerate advertising. Sorry, but not sorry. But yeah, there is a lot of information with a number, a headcount also being involved and gathering data with the work of other people.
I really like the point that you made, like around like the trustful relationship. I think something that really kind of sometimes takes time to really be kind of included in every conversation, be part of the table. Not every organization is already so pro-sourcing and kind of really puts it in the center and kind of, you know, values equally to, you know, recruitment. And what you're saying, it's really important to understand kind of what medium to use, right? And it's a sad truth. There's no one like tool that provides you all the information, right? I mean, yeah, being great at Googling is the first step, but then you have to figure out which platform. And it's sometimes when you look for very specific talent and you know they're not like you have so many different sources, or you look in certain locations where, for instance, the tools and the sources you're using are not really, you know, you don't really have access to it. In the end, X-ray searches are still really gonna always be helpful to you. Looking at kind of conference meetups and gatherings, because they're really, really good talent who are highly engaged with their industry, with their field, you're always gonna have meetups. You just need to find these little bubbles and then kind of engage there, and then you will always have access. Because I know, depending on where you work, you won't have always access to all the local job boards, all the different tools. But in the end, if you're really good at X-ray, you will still have, you know, a great time sourcing and find the talent.
Yeah, these are all great points. Thanks everyone for sharing. I just think we can go to the last question. But Balas, do you want to say something? Go ahead.
Right. Yeah. Someone just shared the CIA. Yeah. Thank you. That's it. Okay. Let's go for the next one. Last one.
Yeah, I think we already mentioned a bit of the sourcing tools and sourcing KPIs, but I'm just curious, how do you measure your sourcing success? Do you have any further insights on this topic? And then I think we can talk about this for 5 minutes and then see the Q&A questions.
The way I like to start this one is that you have to ask your internal client that, like, how good looks like for them. So what is the definition of their success? And then you have to find a way to measure that, because for some companies this is offers, for some companies this is hires, for some companies this is hiring manager interviews, for some, you know, and it can be whatever, right? It can be, I don't know, number of people in the funnel. But again, you have to talk to your client, internal client, which might be your recruiter, right? Or your talent acquisition counterpart, and you have to understand what will make them happy. And I just kind of emphasize it more, because we work with a client today and they measure offers, and they set a target for offers, and they understand that after the offer stage, a sourcer will have zero impact on the rest of the process. You know, that's it. That's how it goes. Till the offer stage, I understand the client saying that you can make a sourcer become accountable till the offer stage, but from the offer stage, you know, we lose power, like, because we cannot influence the process. So yeah, that would be my suggestion here, right?
Yeah, I can only agree. Like, you really have to individually look with your stakeholders what good looks like. I mean, for some, it's really, in the end, making that hire, whatever way you get there, obviously, and they trust you how to get there, because it's just so, so hard to find that person. And for others, it's really kind of like they use sourcing or a sourcing tool to really kind of even, for instance, kind of even out top of funnel, for instance, to add more candidates which don't naturally apply, whether it's like, you know, from a diverse background, or whether it's just certain location or certain skill set, they usually are not applying naturally, right? So there's different ways on how to kind of, you know, use sourcing. In that sense, also what the targets are. Sometimes it's really just, okay, we want to have more candidates top of funnel, or we want to have a certain amount of hires, right? So when you kind of know what good looks like, what the expectations are, then you can kind of adjust your activities towards that. But I think it really depends on also on the roles and the environment and so on.
And, but it's also important that a long time ago I had an article about the value of sourcing. I think it's a great, great one. I think it's still valid. But I understood that there are 7 different value points of sourcing. So it can be the hire, right? It can be the, you know, it can be the pool. But there are some other value points which we usually under consider, like the impact on employer brand, for instance. Or how do you, I think, Jasmine, you were talking about at the beginning of the call, right? If a company doesn't have a too big brand, right? If a company is a startup, right? It's a cool startup, but it's a startup, right? That's what it says. Then sourcing can do a lot to positively impact the employer brand, for instance. Or how do you measure the option of the choice? Let me explain. What is that? You work on a position as a manager. You get five candidates. Three are coming from advertisement. One is coming from referral and one is coming from sourcing. Let's say you happen to hire the one from the advertisement. But, you know, to be able to run the process smoothly, to be able to have enough choices in your process, right? To feel comfortable to make the hire, you had to have that one from sourcing. Because without that, you know, you probably would have missed something. How do you measure that one? I think it's really difficult. It's really difficult that you say, well, sourcing is not only giving you offers and hires, but we are giving you choices. And sometimes these choices speed up the process. What I'm trying to say is that think about all of the potential values that sourcing can bring into a company and make sure that you try to somehow measure all of it and then certainly make an agreement with your client. But again, don't only go for the transactional measures. I think it's really important. Go for the holistic measure that, you know, for instance, how much time a sourcer will free up from the life of the recruiter, for like that, you know, like there's so many other measures as well.
Yeah. No, it's really, really like that, that you really focus on that, the overall holistic value that sourcing brings. And in the end, when companies are able to value that, it really can have such a long-term effect, you know, because all the information that you also gain from this conversation, because they're not as transactions, not just like they know you already, you get so much insight on your brand proposition, how you're perceived on, you know, your interview process and so on. So there's so much more value in sourcing than just kind of, okay, we make that hire, which is obviously great, but it really, you can even out so many things in your recruitment process, in your workforce by kind of using sourcing, and overall kind of the effect on employer brand as well. I really like that you have a very holistic view on that.
My favorite is that when you source in a position, you connect with X number of people, let's say on LinkedIn, let's say X replies to you, Y number of people will not reply to you. And then 6 months later, one of the people who didn't reply that time, they would apply to the company. And then you as a sourcer, you feel like, well, that's partly because of me, partly because that time, you know, we had a conversation, partly because I found him, I sent him something, whatsoever. But from the TA perspective, it's like, no, that's a candidate from application, you know, from advertising. It's like, no, I planted the seed in his head. And that's something that we do a lot.
But that's 100%.
Right.
Definitely. I really like that point of employer branding also, right? Yeah. Making that opening, being aware to directly the applicants that you would like to see, right? So just to not drag this one too far, Carolina, within Connect with Accelerate, right? We do exactly work with startups. Sometimes it's the founders directly that were doing active sourcing. So imagine the amount of time and the value of their time. And then we're saving them that amount of money by doing this approach for them. And then to concretely answer, a few things that we measured there are the amount of people that we introduced to the company and that move forward to later stages in their recruitment process. And then internally, things that we measure are open message rate. So how many, the percentage of messages that are opened by the people that are receiving those messages, we shoot for around 60%. The reply rate also and the messages, the goal is around 25% at the moment. And then the interest rate of those people being contacted, we shoot for that 10%, usually around 7 to 6%.
For the last 2 minutes, I think we can answer some of the questions from the audience.
Right. So on Dobrava, like, how can you survive 20 years in sourcing? You cannot. I always like something in sourcing that still inspires and drives me. That's it. What I personally like is that it's a blend of really different skills. Sometimes I have to use my cognitive skills. Sometimes I have to use my psychological skills. Sometimes I have to use my communication skills, you know, my creativity, whatever. That inspires me. And 20 years just like pass on like this, you know, you all get old people. That's it.
Lovely answer.
Yeah, really want to touch upon that. I think what I think is really important, and when we also were kind of building our team and we were then looking for experienced sources, I think the three things that I always like looked at, what I would advise everyone, like if you go into sourcing or you're in the beginning, having a high like tolerance for frustration, I think is really important, like perseverance and resilience. Creativity, yeah. Like it's so important to be able to rethink, okay, how can I source that differently? How can I phrase that differently? I think creativity is something that sometimes is hard to teach really in sourcing, but I think there are methods to it. Then the other part is, I think just genuinely really liking the challenge. I always said when someone brought me like a role and it was really, really difficult, it was like a year open, year and a half, and it's like, it's basically impossible. And then you just like, try me. I think when you have that mindset, it's right for sourcing because you really like the challenge because it's never the same, right? And then like a few resources just to give you a few like practical things. There's like Irina Shamaeva. I think she's like the number one guru in sourcing. There's the Sourcing Summit. Really connect with other sources, see what they're doing. There's a bunch of like websites also out online. And also obviously in recruitment, everyone probably follows like Hung Lee. I mean, it also moves a lot kind of towards like being more data driven and provides a lot of insights, but there's really a number of cool people out there. And I think the way you get better at sourcing, you really start enjoying bouncing off ideas with other sources. So really connect with the network. And I think then you can really elevate your skills because I've worked on so many different platforms and, you know, I found great, for instance, female engineers on Instagram, you know, super cool way, or, you know, on GitHub and Meetup, and, you know, also sourced on Dribbble, but for instance, I never sourced a lot on Reddit. And at some point, someone told me about how to do it on Reddit. And I was like, cool, right? I would have never thought about it because it wasn't really relevant for the roles that I was sourcing on. But yeah, if you have that exchange, it really helps. Yeah, Sourcing Summit, exactly. That's what someone put into the chat. If you can go there, 100% go there. You're going to have a great time.
Yeah, thanks so much, everyone, for your insight. I would love to answer all of the questions, more than 6 questions in the Q&A box and a lot of comments in the chat. So I think everyone really enjoyed the conversation we had here, but I don't want to take too much of everyone's time. So I would like to thank everyone for joining today. Thank our speakers today. It was really my pleasure to be here with you today. And yeah, if you are interested in continuing this conversation, as I mentioned before, we will be posting this session today in our Talking Talent platform, our community platform, so we can keep networking with people there and we can connect with each other. And yeah, I hope you all have a great rest of your day. And thanks so much, everyone, for joining in.
Thank you. And thanks for having me. Ciao.